Welcome on this Indie Month of May preview show for the From In the Gravel Trap. I am your host, Joey Barnes of Tribute Racing. With me, as always, is Josh Farmer, also of now Tribute Racing. We welcome him into the team. Josh, how you doing today?
Good, Joey. How about yourself?
Doing great. It's been a fun day of racing. Got some exciting stuff going on with the Indy 500 coming up, the 99th edition of the greatest spectacle in racing, the Indianapolis 500. And, you know, it's been interesting with these new aero kits that we've gotten a chance to see. We saw the road course packages, the street course packages, and now we're getting a chance to see what they can do with these, with what they've been, what has been released from Honda, HPD, and Chevrolet, and they had a chance to test those out today. So we're looking forward to talking with you a little bit about that today, as well as seeing if maybe with these new aero kits, if Ari Lyndyke's speed record from 1996 will fall. We're also going to touch on the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis, as well as obviously the Indy 500 at the end of the month. And then a few other odds and ends, driver changes, not necessarily driver changes, but maybe some surprises we didn't see coming for the GP of Indy, and touching a little bit on Connor Daly's new sponsorship. So without further ado, we're going to dive into it. And yeah, let's touch a little bit on these aero kits, shall we, Josh?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Well, first off, Honda released their aero kit. What would you say it was? Thursday, I think it was, Thursday afternoon.
Yep.
And overall, we saw something different with the cars. Chevy has a very different look in the rear wing compared to Honda. Honda has a very, what would you say? It's just an overextended wing, the flicks on the side, rear pods, what have you.
Yeah, that would be a good term for that.
And, you know, a lot of less elements. There's not, in Frank Santoroski's term, from Drafting the Circuits, he called the front wing Pringles cans on the Pringles on the road course. So we lose the Pringle look on the front wing. This very much is very sleek, very fast. And compared to the Chevy has very, very narrow rear wing, very narrow elements on the side. What do you make of it? If you were looking at these, what are the biggest distinctions you see, Josh?
Well, the distinctions between the Chevy and the Honda is, I mean, Chevy's got the larger front wheel or the front wing elements on the sides. They're a little bit larger, which is designed to shoot air over the front tires. Well, the Honda looks more like the traditional DW12, and then Chevy. The Chevy rear pods are much smaller. I mean, when you look at it coming from the front, honestly, the Chevy looks more like a traditional DW12 with only a few subtle changes. Where the Honda is a lot more radical, and the thing that kind of struck me, and we'll touch on this in a minute, is the swan neck connector on the rear wing.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have been asking about those brackets, and some people have asked if they move. I personally have no idea. I haven't had a chance. I know you watched a little bit of the stream this morning that IndyCar aired from Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And did we see any adjustments? I mean, did you see any adjustments? Is it related to those brackets?
No, I didn't see any.
Well, I mean, it's going to be interesting because, as noted, I mean, these are very fast, they're a very simple look, very clean look, and in all honesty, I'm a bigger fan of these than I am the crazy damn aero kits that you see running on road courses and street courses. That said, they pumped out some great times in the first session. I mean, at Honda, who had been lagging behind and had only gotten, I think, 16 top 10 finishes at the beginning of the season collectively, to Chevy's, I think, 24 or 30, some ridiculous number. They ended up sweeping the first session, 1, 2, 3, 4, and Justin Wilson, who hasn't ran a car all season yet, has that a partial season drive with Andretti Autosport that's going to start in this month, and ended up leading the session, so he's obviously showing that he didn't miss a beat, and that speed is already at a 223.989, so almost 224 miles an hour. And Takuma Sato followed him up, but was, you know, he had a 223.153, roughly a tenth and a half off the pace. I tell you what, these speeds in the first test, I mean, it's incredibly fast. I mean, especially when you look at what happened last year with how the season started in the month of May. How month of May is its own season. When you look at the speeds, I believe it was Will Power, as we had talked about a little earlier off the air, these speeds are already faster than that. And obviously, they're only going to get faster. What do you make so far of what you've seen in these opening sessions?
Well, I mean, I would say it's too early to tell. I mean, teams are now finally, I mean, anybody not named Penske or Andretti is getting their first look at the oval aero kits, and the drivers are getting their first shot at how they react. I don't think many people practice any slipstreaming. I mean, we'll start seeing more of that next week after the Grand Prix of Indy. The speeds getting higher is probably the biggest indicator that I can see. I mean, 226 already on opening day. I mean, and then with them beefing up the boost for Fast Friday and Pole Day, you know, I mean, speeds are going to be well over 234, I reckon.
Absolutely. And, you know, we eclipsed in the second test that they had this afternoon. It's kind of a flip of the script, if you will, where Honda was kicking the rear end in the morning session, having the top four of the top five spots being Honda. Chevy ended up taking four of the top five spots in the second session. Marco Andretti was the highest Honda for Andretti Autosport, and I mean he was in, I believe it was third overall in the test times, and he hit a 226.268. And overall, it was the 2000 Indianapolis 500 champion, Juan Pablo Montoya, who broke into the 226.7. So he was roughly less than a tenth faster than Marco on that estimation. Obviously, already we're seeing the top half of this group. It's a very slim margin, 1 through 5. So, we'll see what happens. Obviously, when you've got a situation with these teams and a test like this, they're only going to continue to gain. And with that, I bring it over to you. Do you think, because we see speeds roughly in the beginning of the month, in the high teens, low 20s, now we're in the mid-20s, as they ratchet on the cars, as they work on the cars, and there's a progression throughout the month, the engineers have a way to fine-tune that extra speed out of it, so during the race, they are just lightning quick. That being said, could you see a situation that speed barrier that had been standing there so long from Ari Leyendijk since 1996 could fall?
Well, so many things have to go right in that scenario. I mean, the team has to nail it on the setup. But plus, keep in mind, Ari set that record in cooler temperatures. I mean, it was in roughly in the 50s or 60s, I believe. So the track had a lot more grip. And right now, the temperatures are pretty warm in Indy. And it seems like every few months in May, the temperatures go all stir crazy and things get really cold and then they're back to really warm. So, I mean, but like I said, we won't know for sure until the week of practice. More people have time to test and tune. But I mean, like I said earlier, I think around the 235 range, we can probably, and that's probably a good margin to shoot for.
We've got, there were so many things going on with the test today, and ultimately there's still more to do. So to say anybody clearly jumped out at you is, that's tough to say because they were testing these. If you were to look at a team that looked pretty comfortable with the opening test and the second test, I mean, is there a team out there that looked like they had a pretty decent hold of these aero kits?
Well, like I said earlier, I think Team Penske has got the strong hold. They're carrying the flag for Chevy. I mean, three out of their four cars are in the top five, and Will Power's way down the list. And then the Hondas, it looks like, Andretti Autosport, Andretti had three of their cars in the top 10, including Simona De Silvestro, who's turning her first laps on an oval since the MAP TV 500 in 2013. But Takuma Sato was actually in the top 10, which, I mean, Takuma's always adapted well to the to the speedway. So, you know, there's no surprise to see him up there. And, you know, I wouldn't bet against, I mean, before I go off too far in the deep, I wouldn't bet against Takuma being the next guy to put that number 14 car back in victory lane.
Absolutely. I think you could hit spot on right there. I mean, you look, he almost won the Indy 500 just a few years back. And is that correct on there? Am I seeing Simona in the 29 car, different number than what she ran earlier this year?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the Wilkins in the 25, she's in the 29.
Gotcha. And just for the record, for those that don't know or haven't kept up with what has been the silly season during the season, Andretti Autosport will be running 5 cars for the Indy 500 later this month. So, we came off of an exciting race at Barber Motorsports Park, Josh. And Joseph Newgarden took home his first win. Graham Rahal lit it up and was probably the talk of the race because of his really aggressive passing, successful passing for a change, that took place. What do you expect heading from going from that race and all that momentum and just the phenomenal racing that we saw? We're getting ready for this, I believe it's the second annual Grand Prix, Angie's List Grand Prix of Indy. Last year we had Sebastian Saavedra on the pole. Obviously that ended up a disaster right from the get-go. There's some things we didn't expect heading into this weekend that we just recently found out that we'll get to in a moment. But what do you like? Do you like Newgarden and the momentum and Graham, or do you think this is going to probably be one of those things where maybe last year's winner Simon Pagenaud finally breaks through with the Penske ride this time and maybe solidifies his place on that team?
Well, I would say that Newgarden, you know, the momentum that Newgarden's built up is good heading into the month of May. I mean, last year, you know, he had to pit in the beginning. He had to pit in the beginning of the race, but then when he was the quickest car on the track after his crew put four fresh tires on the car, and he was. I think, you know, momentum's always on his side, and if you look at statistically this year, Newgarden has qualified better and he has finished better than he ever has in his three previous seasons in IndyCar, and I could say the same thing for Graham. So I look for them to be quick in it at the GP of Indy.
Simona's running the GP of Indy?
No,
that's shocking. But I mean, I really wish she'd be running, because unfortunately. And once again, we're going to dog this guy until we beat a dead horse here. But she should be in a ride. But unfortunately, we've got a guy who we thought was done at Barber who is just atrocious in a race car. And, you know, I can't imagine he has too many friends on the racetrack either. I know he damn sure doesn't have one in me. Francesco Dracone is running... Dracone is running the GP of Indy. He had a 4-race deal. I don't even know if he tied his career best finish of 20th yet this year. I know he keeps finishing last, and he keeps running 4 seconds off the pace or 3 seconds off the pace, and honestly, it's really a danger, especially when you look now, he's got the added element of a very long front stretch at Indy.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot more room to get out of the way if he's smart.
But thus far he has not shown that. So what the hell's going on here, Josh?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, it comes down to money, as we talked about last week, of, you know, Dracone's bringing money, and Dale Coyne's able to keep the shop doors open and support his number one car with the did the same thing with Milka Duno until 2011. But my problem with Dracone is his behavior on Twitter. I mean, fans on Twitter have gone there and ridiculed him, and there was quite a bit of banter between him and fans after he mowed down his crew member at the Grand Prix of NOLA, which that one may or may not have been his fault, but yeah, given his reputation, it's easy to point the finger and go, haha, look at that guy. But it was during the race of St. Petersburg had tweeted, you know, that thank God for all these debris cautions, or else Dracone would be on the track. But Dracone tweeted back and said, yeah, I saw your mom out on the track. I mean, that kind of lack of professionalism when you're supposed to be a professional, you know, athlete race car driver. I mean, you know, if IndyCar can fine Elio Castroneves for the tweet that his sister tweeted out saying that IndyCar made a bad call, and Dracone going out and deliberately attacking people, you know. I mean,
in no way does he represent the sport well from a competitive standpoint or obviously from a professional standpoint.
No.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
How the hell does he get sponsor money?
Well, he's a pilot in Italy and he's probably got connections. All I can say, and I'm going to regret saying this, but don't quit your day job.
Oh, boy. There it is. That said, do you like potentially, I mean, obviously there's no confirmation on updates throughout the season or when we've got a nice little small break here. Maybe this is a race that a couple of updates come into play with these aero kits, the road course aero kits, mind you. Now we have to be specific about that since the Speedway Oval kits have been released. How do you feel about the potential that maybe Honda has something more coming into the GP of Indy?
Well, I mean, I say the GP, every track we've been through this year has been so different. I mean, St. Petersburg was so different from NOLA. NOLA was so different from Long Beach. And Barber was so different from Long Beach. And, you know, with every track being as different as it is, we really aren't going to know how the aero kits are going to play out until it happens. I mean, I know I sound like a broken record saying that over and over again, but, you know, the GP of Indy circuit, you know, is very flat. And there's room for slipstreaming on the front stretch. So, you know, but overall straight line speed, you know, I think Chevy still has been beat. And you know, if you're looking at the stats of Chevy, has been able to click top 10 after top 10, where Honda is, you know, other than last week, Honda was struggling to even get into the top 10.
We were really hard on this guy last year, and I publicly admitted it a couple of shows ago that I crow for this, but Sebastian Saavedra last year had the pole, and we know that what stalled out, whatever the case may be, he was a pole sitter at this event, and he ended up essentially being the laughing stock of the fan base and of a lot of critics because the car crashed, he stalled out for whatever reason. It could have been a mechanical issue, what have you, but make no mistake, he got in the Ganassi car at Long Beach earlier this year, drove a whale of a race, and ended up finishing 10th. Are you sold on him, and should he be racing this weekend?
Well, one race is never enough. I mean, I think Saavedra's got a little bit of talent. I mean, if you look at his life stats, you know, he's won a lot of races, but he's had the tendency in the past to make that cataclysmic mistake. But I think I'm not sure if Dario Franchitti is on his pit box like how Dario is on stage camera. But I mean that kind of mentoring by one of the best IndyCar drivers of the modern era is only gonna help him. But in the end of the day, it's up to him to use what Dario gives him.
I don't disagree with you at all on that. I think that with Saavedra, he needs a little bit more seasoning. I mean, you look at some of the runs he did at Iowa last year, and it's just, you almost feel like there's a rawness there, and he just needs to finish. Like,
mm-hmm.
And it's just something there to get him over the hump. Because let's make no mistake about this. If you were from Columbia last year, you finished on the podium unless you were him. Everybody from Columbia that's in this series, and there were four drivers from Colombia last year, if I remember correctly on the numbers. You had Montoya, Carlos Munoz, and then Huertas. And then you had Saavedra, correct? Are those the four? Is there any more I'm missing?
No.
And he was the only one that didn't pop out the podium. And, you know, that's got to really hurt his confidence, hurt his pride. That being said, I think that if nothing else, that 10th place run gives him an opportunity in the future to run one or two more races in equipment that hopefully is equal to that, to see if he can back up. Because let's be honest, it's not like Charlie Kimball is lighting the world on fire yet this year. And for all intents and purposes, I don't think Charlie Kimball's finished higher than 10th this year. I mean, maybe. If he has, obviously I'm not remembering it, so that kind of takes into account how consistently great he's been at the front. But as it relates to the GP of Indy, I tell you who I really like, and I know it's going to sound kind of funny because of a few weeks ago y'all dogged me about this. Jack Hawksworth led 31 laps last year. Started on the outside of the front row. He was a rookie last year. Yes, he's in a Honda, but he's in a much better environment, a much more stable team, with all due respect to Brian Herta Autosport. AJ Foyt's been doing this a while. And I tell you what, if the conditions or whatever the case may be, if things can get anywhere close to how they were, the setup, the comfort level for him, I really got to think that we're going to see him get his first win. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at the numbers right now. I mean, yeah, Pagino and Hunter Ray and Castroneves, the usual cast, got the podiums. But when I'm looking here, you got Bourdais up here. I mean, Briscoe is not in the series anymore. Kimball, who I just bashed a little. Will Power ended up 8th. Takuma Sato, who's now Hawksworth teammate, was 9th. I mean, not a whole lot there except for Hunter Ray on Andretti Autosport. But I really think that there might be a chance there with Hawksworth, especially since when a driver has a track that he's favorable at, I look at this and I think there's a very real possibility he could have it. Last year was like most IndyCar races, pit sequence, pit strategy, everything gets kind of crazy. The guy that dominates doesn't typically win because it's off sequence, and he leads because he's off sequence, or she. I mean, if I was a betting man, though, I'm putting my money on Hawksworth.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, Hawksworth he's always been one of those guys that, you know, talented, and you know, you just want to see him take that next great leap. And I think, you know, a track that he's run good at before, you know, I think that's a perfect opportunity for him to pounce.
I think that it's important for Joseph Newgarden to come out and at least do nothing else but get a top five, to really back up his win, keep the momentum rolling, prove that it wasn't a fluke. That's where I'm coming from with that. And I think he's definitely capable, and I think it's time for Ray Hall to try to close the show. I mean, last year, I said it here on the show last week, you know, he's good for a couple of second-place runs. I want to be proven wrong. Because it's very important for the Ray Halls and the Andretti's of this sport to be at the front of the field, because that's really what's going to help push this series. They're honestly, and I hate to say this, but they're probably the most marketable drivers easily in this because of the history of the family. And I think it's important that they get to the front, and I think it's about time that we see both of them, and at the moment, especially Graham, since he's coming off of a second place, close the deal and shake the fact that he's only got one race win off his back. Add another one to it, you know? Double your win total. But, you know, we'll see. I'm excited for the Grand Prix of Indy a lot more than I was last year, I tell you that. moving on here, we touched on that for a little bit. I want to go back a little bit to the Indy kits, Indy Aero kits, but I want to go towards something that was reported. We both read it on motorsport.com. Our good buddy Christopher DeHardy, contributing writer over there for him. He didn't do this piece, but he writes for him. Some very controversial, borderline controversial, and people have their differing opinions. Michael Andretti had some very critical things to say about these new Honda Aero kits, and Chevy Aero kits, if you will.
Yeah, Michael has pretty much said that you can only lose in this scenario, and saying that the new IndyCar Aero kits could very prove to be a costly mistake. And what his general consensus is, I quote from Andretti, is, "All I can say is that I've been talking about this from day one. I said, guys, you're doing two things. You're putting a huge expense into the series, and you're messing around with our product on racetrack, which is the best product out there. You can only lose in this scenario. You're not going to gain. Now we have a split field. Why? Millions and millions of dollars have been spent by manufacturers and the teams, and I don't see that it has put one more person on the stand."
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, when you hear something like that, I don't disagree with him, and I know a lot of people, Adam Tate, our usual co-host on here, he thinks the only reason that Michael's saying this is because Michael's whining because he's behind and they're not quite as superior as the Chevy Aero kit thus far for the road course and street courses. But I think there is something to be said with the fact that The product was good. I mean, you look, we had, I think it was 11 different race winners last year, or 13, something like that.
And year before, same thing.
Yeah, and it's just, the product and the racing is good. We've got to do something to make sure that the IndyCar World Champion is going out and doing public appearances and being more vocal and being involved. I mean, you look at what they've done with Kevin Harvick, and that guy is, he doesn't just show up on Letterman. That guy's on Regis and Kelly, and he's on this news station and on that, and he's everywhere. And in some ways, that's how NASCAR does it right. Don't get me wrong. I love IndyCar to death, and I sometimes I think NASCAR puts their people through too much at times because it is exhausting. It is 24/7, and you're living on 2 hours of sleep in some cases. But, you know, the fine line here. Do something more. And I think part of that is also putting money into the series to help promote and market it. And I think, you know, let's see some Honda commercials. You know, let's see more of James Hinchcliffe in a car. Let's see Chevy put out a commercial. And if there's, if what Michael Andretti is saying is pure 100% concrete value to this, you got to think, if Chevy's pushing for this, let's be very clear about my opinion on this. In no shape, way, or form is breaking the speed record held by Ari Leindike going to put more asses in the seats. It could get a driver killed, and you built a TW12 chassis that is supposed to, you know, it came from Dan Weldon. He tested it. Unfortunately, tragically, lost his life in 2011 at Vegas during some very baffling calls, if you will, baffling things going on, you know, putting multiple cars on a track like that, pack racing, an old chassis, you know, and contributing to this new Dallara DW12. I just got to think that you are, and a lot of people have been very critical of me saying, Joey, you hate change and this, that, and the other, but I don't like throwing everything in there at one time. I like working a little at a time and tweaking, and a little at a time and tweaking. And I feel like you're really making radical adjustments in the road and aero, road and street course kits, aero kits. And now you're coming out with, it's not uncommon to have this flat of the wings, front and rear. But at the end of the day, I just, I'm nervous. I mean, I'm just really nervous about the fact that this could be something that's going a little too far.
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with what you have said there, but I think it's just the other issue that I've seen is that you know, I mean, the whole aero kit, you know, it was like they announced it in the iconic committee in 2010, and then 2011 they said, well, we're gonna in 2011 the owners were in 2011 let me start. 2011, the owners were saying, oh, it's going to cost too much, and then they diverted the aero kits to 2013, and then they got delayed again, and then come Detroit in 2013, Derek Walker unveiled his plan for the Indy for the aero kits. But now it's like, now here we come. I mean, at the end of the year, a few of the smaller teams, I'm not going to name names, but they were bitching, a few of them were bitching about that only the top teams, Penske and Andretti, were allowed to test the aero kits, and Penske was able to test and develop the aero kit at tracks around the country. I mean, obviously we only saw the spy shots at Coda, and Honda, we only saw a little bit of the video of the oval kit being tested at Fontana, but it's just, and then from when the kits were homologated in late January, they've only had a month to mass produce parts and deliver them to the teams, and that's proved to be rather bad because we're short on spare parts. And, you know, I mean, obviously at St. Petersburg we had a bit of a shit show of, there was debris, you know, all these debris cautions and a fan getting hit in the head with a piece of debris. I mean, obviously you can never really plan for a surprise, but, you know, but it's just the whole aero kit deal seems to be rushed, and you know, and plus with the whole concept of Chevy and Honda being pretty much required to take a loss at the expense of you know at the expense of just getting the aero kit out, when obviously Honda's behind the eight ball, and Brian Hunter Ray said it on the press conference. I think you may have even asked him that Honda just got a late start, Chevy got an early start, and
he said it had nothing to do. Paraphrasing here, but it had nothing to do with the resources at Andretti Autosport. It was more or less that Honda got a late start on the entire program, and they essentially were just behind the eight ball from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think it's like the aero kits are kind of a low-cost way to deviate from spec car racing, but, you know, even then, it's kind of hard to argue spec car racing being bad when in the DW12 era, we've maybe only had 5 bad races. You know, I would say, you know, a couple races in Mid-Ohio weren't that good. TMS in 2013 was a dud. 2012 at TMS was amazing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but you know, we've only had a few bad races during that time. And look at any other era of IndyCar racing. It's like, you know, Mid-Ohio and Toronto would be a parade in the kart era. You know, and you'd have a guy lead every lap, and where you know the DW12 made tracks a lot more raceable. I mean, the drivers were able to drive a little bit harder, and obviously there's going to be that adjustment curve going to the aero kit. But you know, I mean, I'm not going to go as far as what Joey said as getting somebody killed. I'm just being cautiously optimistic of you know if the drivers think that the speed is too fast, I hope that Derek Walker will listen to them. I mean I hate to say, but it's like in Vegas, you know, Will Power, Dario Franchi, Oriel Servia all said this track is not suitable, and they raced on anyways. But you know, I mean I'm not really going to speak for Barnhart. I think I've gone down that road that, you know, he's going to sink his ankles into the concrete no matter what you tell him. But I would hope to think that Derek Walker would listen. I mean, if they start clocking speeds at 235 and drivers are saying we can't control this thing, I would hope that they'd listen. I know I kind of went off on a tangent there, and I know Joey's here to eager to talk.
Well, first and foremost, I mean, I know there's something that you and I can't forget, and it's nothing that we can put on any one person, whether it be Barnhart or anybody else. It's just the matter of the fact there's the political involvement with sponsors to please and the whole political obligations on that side of the sport. I mean, the corporate side of the sport, if you will. You know, there's always somebody there that you've got to please, and thus you can't always say no. And that's the difficult part of it. You know, no matter what obstacles you face, as they say, the show must go on. And, you know, at the end of the day, the reason I'm so worried about it is because we're not progressively testing these from a smaller oval to a bigger oval. We just automatically said, hey, screw it. Let's unload these babies on this 2.5-mile oval today, and let's see what they do. And they're already hitting speeds faster than what we saw last year at this time. Actually, later in this time. Last year, midweek, they were hitting 226s or so.
Mm-hmm.
Mid-month, I should say. And here we are, May 3rd, hitting 226. We are officially 10 miles an hour away from the record, and they have yet to fine-tune anything. But to your point, I will say this. Not to your point, but to counter it maybe, to argue it, whatever. Maybe part of the reason, I mean, we obviously know that IndyCar is more than likely, the budget's not quite as extensive as NASCAR. The pockets aren't as deep because we don't have Monster Energy drinks or beer sponsors or whatnot around this sport. Although it would be great if we did, because frankly, more of that being brought in only helps the sport. But the reason why the Penske's and the Andretti's and the Ganassi's can go off and do all these tests and the smaller teams can't, let's look at the smaller teams' budgets for a second, and let's compare it and rival it to a team like Penske or a team like Ganassi or a team like Andretti. IndyCar knows, in a perfect world, IndyCar would front the bill to some degree to help out the smaller teams and push them to go test and say, we don't want the Andretti's, the Ganassi's, and anybody to go test. That's still unfair because a team is a team no matter how big it is. Penske started small. Andretti started small, kind of. Ganassi started small. They all worked their way up from something. And, you know, they had to work their way up against the Giants of their heyday. So in retrospect, you look at it, and it's the fact that Penske, Ganassi, and Andretti, they can't afford to go to these places. They can't afford to test. Would it be nice if there was a little bit more of a share? Potentially, if you're looking for equal, but if you're looking at the business side of it, they earn their money and they deserve to keep it. At the end of the day, that they got what they got, and deservedly so, because they worked their tail end off for it. Aero kits, always good to bring out the drama. So, now, getting ready to bring in a couple of nice highlights. Getting ready to talk about what I am super excited for is the 99th Indianapolis 500. The greatest spectacle in racing. The mecca of motorsports, in my opinion. I can't wait. You know, getting a chance to go there, finally getting a chance to join you. I know you've been there. This will be my first year covering it, and I'm super excited when it comes to that. As it relates, before we head into the crazy awesomeness that is the month of May and the tail end, what do we think about Connor Daly, the release of the sponsor, working with Richard Petty, his dad, Derek, ex-Formula One star, putting a few things together? I know you've got a little bit of news on this front. I know you had followed it a little bit this morning. Tell us a little bit about that, and also, what can we expect? I mean, this is his third career start, his second start in the 500.
Well, he's going to be sponsored by Smithfield Foods, which is the largest producer of pork products in the world. So, you know what they say, bacon goes good with everything.
Mm. That's true. High cholesterol.
Yeah, especially if it's chicken fried, which we may eventually get to if we go down to Texas World before it closes. But before I go off too far on much of a tangent, but I think, you know, like I've said it before, you know, Connor's something IndyCar can capitalize on. I mean, he grew up in Indianapolis, grew up 5 miles away from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And, you know, he's very, very professional in what he wants to do. He knows where he needs to make improvements. He's not overly cocky. He's not trying to do too much too early. I mean, when he was with AJ Foyt, you know, they really didn't give him, I don't think they really gave him that much of a leash. But, you know, Connor, I didn't hear him bitch or complain once. And, you know, I think, and, you know, and like I said before, Connor could probably do as well on a road course as he could on an oval. And, you know, Sam Schmidt has always said in the release, you know, Connor's worthy of a ride. So, I mean, I'm curious to see, you know, how well he does in Indy. If this is going to, I mean, I don't know if Schmidt can handle a third car for another race, just because the way the purse distribution or lack thereof is, you know. But I mean, I don't see him firing James Jakes on the spot. I mean, except I'm not really sure on how much money Jakes is bringing, because his sponsor is a MediaTek advertising. I don't know where, if he's got connections to that or not. I mean, I haven't seen his typical Acorn Stairlift logos anywhere this year.
Well, we do know that it is for the full season, though. I mean, yeah. I love Connor Daly. I think he's a great talent. I think he's good for the series. I think that it would have been nice to see Alexander Rossi be the guy that they filled in over Dale Coyne. And I personally was on the button saying, let's see an Alexander Rossi Connor Daly lineup. You know, bring the GP2 guys over from Europe that had that experience, and let's see how they line them up, and let's see how they do. And I think that Connor needs some seasoning. Personally, I know his first career start was with AJ Foyt. Racing back in 2013. I personally think that that's a team that would probably fit him, and next to that, I would probably say Schmidt Peterson. I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest if in the next season or two we could see something come together, depending on what happens with Scott Dixon, depending what happens with Kanaan or Kimball, or maybe even Tate Karam, with how Tate Karam has been running. He seems to be good on ovals only at this point. If potentially we see something over there where Connor lands over there, it's just, to me, there's a vibe, there's a feel that he fits in those teams. And I think a team like Schmidt-Peterson and like Ganassi would be so favorable to him due to the insightfulness that they could bring in from the team, the seniority from the team, to be groomed under somebody I mean, this kid's still young. I think he's 23 years old, isn't it? Isn't he 23,
mm-hmm.
I think?
Mm-hmm.
I think that we need talent like this in the sport, much like I've been tooting the horn on Spencer Piggott, the Indy Lights guy, rolling around with Juncos Racing. You know, I think the next talent, I mean, you're looking at the Brabhams, the Matt Brabhams, the Spencer Piggott, you know, to rival that of the Carlos Munoz, the Gabby Chavez, the Jack Hawksworth. And I really want to see Connor succeed. So, you know, hats off to his dad and Richard Petty for making this deal together to help get this going for him. I really hope he's at least there among the top 15, top 10. He deserves to have a good run. I mean, it wasn't very favorable his first 500. He finished 22nd, I believe. So, you know, hats off to them for putting this together. That being said, Ed Carpenter grabbed the pole the last 2 years. His speed last year was over 231. You know, and you've got Ryan Hunter-Reay, obviously everybody know he won last year. The year before, we know that Tony Kanaan finally broke through. This is the greatest spectacle in racing. I mean, it is the 99th Indianapolis 500. We're a year before the Centennial. We got brand new aero kits. We've got the great unknown with how they're going to work together once we tune these cars. We don't know the hole in the air. To me, it looks like Honda's going to create a bigger hole in the air than the Chevy based off of the wideness and the hips of the rear wing. What are you thinking here? Like, how do you feel as this month of May approaches and as the Indy 500 approaches? Who do you like? What do you see? You know, is it going to be crazy amount of lead changes like last year? What are we thinking here, Josh?
I'm honestly thinking with Juan Pablo Montoya having a year to get himself antiquated to the Indy cars, and he's adapted to the oval kits rather quickly, and he was fast in testing today. I wouldn't bet against Montoya to sit on the front row and go out and win the race. I mean, I wouldn't bet against Carpenter either. I think Carpenter has got, you know, I mean, because Carpenter is great on, he's great at IMS. I mean, he damn well should have won the race last year had not been for some close racing on restart. He very well would have won. But I think, you know, I think Carpenter's got a shot, and I think, you know, anybody on Team Penske, I think, has a legitimate shot at winning.
No, I definitely agree with that, especially with how they've been running this year. You know, man, oh, man. Would it be great to see a surprise winner, if you will? I mean, last year we got Elio battling Ryan Hunter-Reay. You know, we've got the year before, Kanaan mixing it up once again with Ryan Hunter-Reay. You know, Marco's around there, but you know, we've been waiting to see him finally break through and fulfill that potential that everybody's seen for so many years. And Will Power's gotten really good on ovals. We're waiting to see him really march and lead commandingly up there at the Indy 500, but it always seems to come back to Hunter-Reay, Castroneves, Dixon. You know, there for a while it was Dario Franchitti. Is it about time maybe we see somebody come up? I mean, Sage Karam's going to be in this race, and as much as he's been lagging in the road course department, he's for sure last year he finished ninth, if I remember correctly. I think it was ninth. Kurt Busch ended up finishing fifth. They were both rookies in that race. Sixth, I'm sorry. Sage Karam going to bring it this year?
Yeah, I think he's got it. I mean, Indy, you know, he's got more time to test and get antiquated with the car. And, you know, last year he probably would have qualified up higher, but just Ryan Reinbold Racing didn't really have the budget to do as much practice and what have you. But I mean, I could easily say that Karam could easily be competitive this year. I think for Karam at Indy is watch how he raced at the end of the 2013 Freedom 100 when it was he, Gabby Chavez, and Carlos Munoz all running three wide and Karam was in the middle. I mean, just watch Karam. Karam never wiggled once when they were three wide all the way down the backstretch, all the way through turn four. You know, Karam never wiggled. So, you know, the kid's smooth, and the kid has it on the ovals. I mean, he's still a baptism by fire on the road courses. But I mean, I think a sentimental pick for a win, maybe it's just a race fan in me, but it would be to see Justin Wilson win. I mean, Wilson had a best finish of fifth in 2013. He probably had a good shot at winning. You know, I mean, Tony Kanaan took the lead on the final corner after that restart. But then, you know, you had three Andretti Autosport cars in front of him. But Wilson was running there in fifth, just like, where did he come from? Almost like Kevin Harvick in the 2007 Daytona 500. You know, where did he come from? And I think if the Andretti guys would have started mixing up with Kanaan, I think Wilson would have probably just scooted on by, see ya, and could have won. So I think Wilson winning would be up there with Dan Weldon winning the 2011 Indy 500 in terms of, you know, shock value and a driver trying to rebuild his career after, you know, almost potentially losing it.
I agreed in full. And I will say this. Justin Wilson is a guy that a lot of people, fans, media center, teams, other drivers, critics of from all walks, have said, if Justin Wilson can get in top-notch equipment, he could be tough to beat. And a lot of people would compare his talent to Will Power. And now he's got that chance. He's pulling what Will Power did at Penske, albeit a hell of a lot later in his career than Will Power did it. But Justin Wilson's going to be running that partial schedule, potentially having a full season next year, potentially having a shot at least the title. We'll see what happens. You know, when as it relates to some of the smaller guys here, number one, I got to give an attaboy for Marco consistently finishing in the top four, it seems like. You know, that guy's got more podiums and top fours lately at that track than anybody. He just needs to find a way to close the deal, and, you know, we'll see if the 99th Indianapolis 500 is when he finally does it, although, albeit, it would be more fitting, in my opinion, for an Andretti to close out the 100th, the centennial, with a win. But, hell, why not both? That being said, Andretti Luck would have him win the 99th or end up on his lid. I really got to look at guys like J.R. Hildebrand, Townsend Bell, guys that run well here. Ed Carpenter, who, the Indiana native, got on pole, always been fast here. Will he finally get a chance to break through and get – it would be a huge win for not only for him, but, I mean, that's just a great story in itself. I mean, that's the equivalent of Tony Stewart winning it, maybe even more so, obviously, of Tony, but considering that Tony's been in and out of IndyCar and NASCAR and now really solidified in NASCAR, you look at Ed Carpenter building this team. It's his own team. Coming up from literally being the Vitor Mira, the best runner-up for the longest time, and now maybe potentially breaking through and grabbing that win, especially given the success recently that's happened with them, now with Newgarden winning. Not a driver has been in that equipment from the time that they were Carpenter. What was the name of that? Now they're CFA Racing. What was it? Ed Carpenter Racing last year?
Yeah.
So, you look at Mike Conway, you look at him. The only driver not to win in that equipment so far is J.R. Hildebrand. Because now if they move to CFH Racing...
Well, Luca hasn't won.
Well, Luca, yeah, of course. So, what is it? Three out of five. Three out of the five drivers have gone to victory lane driving under Ed Carpenter's banner. Now Ed Carpenter, Sarah Fisher, Hartman banner. I got to like Townsend Bell, too. He's always fast here. I got to like, obviously, we touched on Hildebrand. Oriel Servia is getting a chance. Brian Clausen. I mean, there's some good stories here. And if they can find the speed and really just hang tough, because let's not forget, 500 miles, long race, there could be a transition, a little bit of a difference to the attitude of this race that we see at the final 100 miles than what we see at the first 100. I mean, you can go out there and look like a superstar the first 100 and then just fall. Falter at the end, and Thomas Schechter damn sure proved that several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll be bringing more as far as the Indy stuff as month of May starts trudging along and we get a chance to see more, we'll bring it to you. We're going to move on here to the next and final segment, and it's just, albeit total speculation on our front, Jeff Gordon's retiring this year in NASCAR. He's going to put up the helmet. He's in the number 24. Chase Elliott's going to take over that ride. Chase Elliott's going to probably do a hell of a job for him. But there was a time when Jeff Gordon, before he was a four-time NASCAR Sprint Cup champion, was really considering dipping his hands into this sport, into IndyCar. And now he finally gets a chance to lead the field to the green flag at the with the Corvette Z06 pace car at Indianapolis this upcoming month of May. So I'm going to ask you this. Obviously, it would have been a change in NASCAR's world. It would have been a change in Jeff Gordon's world. He would have been around when you had the IRL kart split. We don't know which way that would have gone. Let's say all roads lead back here. Let's say it starts in 1993, much like it did then, or 92, actually, at Atlanta when it started then. Off all roads lead back here to Indy, in IndyCar. And if Jeff Gordon had chosen this path, just for fun, where do you think he ranks? What do you think his accomplishments would be? Like, if we were to compare guys, you've got Mario Andretti, A.J. Foyt, Michael Andretti, now Scott Dixon, flirting with the top up there, the Unsers. Where do you think his name goes on the all-time wins list if he were to actually come over? Do you think he would have gotten a handle of these cars and been a badass?
Yeah. I mean, I think Jeff Gordon, obviously, he's been one of the best NASCAR drivers in history, and he's, I would say he's very much like Tony Stewart and A.J. Foyt, been able to adapt in anything. I mean, he came up the ranks racing in open wheel in sprint cars, and very much like what Tony Stewart did. And Tony Stewart's the only successful, other than Mario and A.J. had their one-offs in NASCAR, but Tony's the only real successful driver to come over from open wheel. Sure, it was the IRL back then, but I mean, Tony would have easily been a winner in kart. Hard to say how he would have run on a road course, because he never did it, for obvious reasons. But I could easily see Jeff Gordon being high up on the wins list in IndyCar.
And I think, it's always been an intriguing question when you look at guys like him and Tony Stewart, and you wonder where would they have been, because back then, and the reason we bring this up, folks, for those that don't know. They did a lot of sprint car racing back in their heyday, and a lot of USAC sprint car racing, and a lot of these guys that come up to Indy, the Brian Clausens of the world, who currently still sprint car race and are highly, highly successful. You may see Brian Clausen run mid-pack in the Indy 500, but make no mistake, he is a damn fine dirt track racer when it comes to getting in a sprint car. That guy will put up wins and heats and features like nobody's business. So, when I'm looking at everything, there's ties to Indiana for Gordon. There's ties to Indiana for Stewart. Man, do you think they both win the Indy 500? I mean, off the air, you and I have talked about how Michael Andretti probably wins the Indy 500 if he actually races in the Indy 500 during that split time. Do you think maybe we see a situation that Jeff and Tony would both be Indy 500 champions?
Had they stayed in IndyCar?
Had they gone to IndyCar? Or in Tony's case, stayed if Jeff's come over?
Yeah, I can see that.
That's a very quick, brief answer.
Yeah. Short and simple.
All right. Well, overall, I don't know if Tony can wheel around a 3,400-pound stock car at a road course and like Watkins Glen and Sears Point, Infineon, I don't think he would have too many problems. I think the street courses would be interesting to see. But overall, I think he would have performed well, especially at a place like Grand Prix of Indy or what have you. What do you make overall? We've had a chance to talk on this show. We've been on here. We're getting ready to close out. Month of May, the IndyCar season itself, just give me your brief take on your final thought, whether it be the season, the month of May, this whole situation going on with the aero kits, anything going on. Give me your final thought, your take on this.
Well, it's definitely going to be an interesting month of May, to say the least. I mean, these aero kits are a huge unknown, and I think, maybe a little bit of that. What made the Indy 500 great was to see who would be sandbagging before Fast Friday and seeing who's got the best equipment. I mean, now it's pretty much who can make the best with the aero kits, and I think some of that is coming back. I mean, it would be great if they had all of this week to practice, and then they just
close up the track to reconfigure for the road course for the weekend, and then they start Indy 500 practice right after the Grand Prix of Indy. You know, I mean, I think a little bit more practice would definitely be of help. You know, I mean, we don't know how the cars are going to react with the higher boost when they are probably going to eclipse the 235 average. But, you know, it's just, I guess the common theme I'm reiterating is there's going to be a lot of unknowns.
Absolutely. You know, I think from a sportsmanship perspective, you bring up a good point. It's been a long time since I've seen the sandbagging happen on Fast Friday or before Fast Friday, what have you. And it really is, you know, drop your car, load it up, tune it, let's go. Let's see what you got and who's fast from the get-go, just continues to tune. And that's usually who you see fast come the 500. And it really leaves less to be desired, less to be surprised. Changing up some of these qualifying formats that they did a little while back for the Indy 500, I'm not a big fan of. I very much like the old style, and I, you know, 29 years old going on 30, and you can call me an old-timer already because I'm like, don't want change to happen. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it was a good formula. And, you know, I wish – this is going to sound really harsh. I wish, to some degree – they would take care, and I mean IndyCar, the sanctioning bodies, all involved, you know, sponsors. This is everybody. We're talking Chevy, Honda, you know, everybody across the camps, in all camps involved with IndyCar. I wish they would take care of the entire IndyCar season, even with a grain of salt, a tenth of what they would the rest of the IndyCar. What they do for the Indy 500, I wish they would do for even 10%. Of the season, or 10% of that for the season. I'm getting tongue-tied here, but I really feel like that's what's missing. You put on this wonderful, amazing, greatest spectacle in racing. It is the grandest of the grand, in my opinion. 24 hours of Le Mans does not compete with it. Mostly, I'm not a sports car guy. Josh here is. He might say Le Mans is the greatest. I argue. I'm an American. He is too, but he's kind of flirting with the French, I guess. But you know, at the end of the day, I really wish that they would put a tenth of effort into the rest of the season that they put into Indy. That's how I meant to say it.
Yeah. Well, what you're saying opens up a whole other can of words, but can of worms. Now I'm getting tongue-tied and contagious. But opening up that can of worms is going to take more than 1 minute and 45 seconds to explain. For why it seems like the owners of IndyCar do not seem to care much about it outside of the month of May. And it's going to be interesting to see after they have their 100th Indy 500 what they are going to do.
I really feel like everything is being either A, scrapped or built up or trialed and errored just so we can have all of this go towards the 100th edition of the Indianapolis 500. Tracks, promotions, everything. I mean, that is the be-all, end-all. So, we hope you enjoyed this edition of In the Gravel Trap. It is the Indy Month of May preview. This was I am Joey Barnes of Tribute Racing. We welcome Josh Farmer to the team of Tribute Racing, and it's been a pleasure to have you on. Josh, what's your Twitter handle?
JFarmer7710.
JoeyBarnes85. We're not difficult to find. On behalf of him, myself, we hope you enjoyed this broadcast. We're really happy to bring it to you tonight. We hope you join us on our usual roundtable with Christopher DeHardy of Motorsport.com, Adam Tate, also of Tribute Racing, and Frank Santoroski of Drafting the Circuits Wednesday night on our weekly show, In the Gravel Trap, our episodic podcast, if you will. We want to send out prayers to Jules Bianchi, Michael Johnson, Blake Jones, Michael Schumacher. And just let you know that we're thinking about you, your family, your friends. We send out our prayers and well wishes for y'all. We wish y'all a happy Sunday evening and good work. Have a good night, folks.